I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of.
Welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Glad to have you listening today. So we've got a different kind of show for you today and tomorrow. We're actually doing a two-part show. My guest today and tomorrow is my dear husband, Kevin. And tomorrow we're going to share the wild story of my healing journey. It's a journey that I'm still on. Some of you have heard parts of it, but we're going to dig in deep and just talk about what we're learning about God's desire to bring healing to our bodies and our souls and our emotions. Well, today we're going to go back to the beginning and talk about what it's like to be married to someone who struggles, whether that's some emotionally, physically, otherwise, mentally. When one is carrying the load, there's a burden that just shifts in marriage, and it really does impact the dynamic of marriage. And we'll talk about that. We're going to be raw and honest as can be. And we've got a book. I've got a book from years ago that I wrote, thanks to Kev just letting me tell the story for the sake of the greater good. But it's titled Alone in Marriage, Encouragement for the Times When It's All Up to You. I interviewed all kinds of women, military wives, and different scenarios. And no matter the reason for the one-sided season, the same things would come up in a heart of a woman is fear, loneliness, anger, worry. Now, I will tell you, the weight also shifts the other way. And there's times when men are carrying the load, as in our case, for many years, Kev, you know, carried the load and really did feel the burden of that. It again changes the dynamic of marriage. But because I wrote that book for women, it really isn't a how-to on marriage. It really is about cultivating intimacy with God and really setting your eyes on Him and letting Him sort through the stuff that's coming up in you because you're walking through a one-sided season in marriage. You know, we stand at the altar and we commit to love one another through sickness and in health, whether rich or poor. Yet when the going gets tough, it sometimes feels easier to throw in the towel. And if you're that person who's struggling, you might also deal with all kinds of shame and vulnerability. If you're the reason the marriage is struggling because you've got a sickness you can't overcome, or you've got anxiety issues or depression issues, it's so easy to feel like it's completely your fault. Well, there's a way to navigate these challenges, staying in love with God, staying in love with each other. It's not easy. And that's why we're going to be just very honest about the story today. Quick announcement before I introduce my husband. The theme this month at Faith Radio, you've probably already been hearing about it, is forgiveness, which is a huge part of our story. You will find so many resources on our website about forgiveness, videos, posts, shows, all kinds of things. So just go visit our website after the show, myfaithradio.com. All right, let me introduce you to my dear husband, and we'll get this party started. With more than 40 years in the construction industry, Kevin Larson is a natural-born builder with a missions-oriented mindset. He received the prestigious Distinguished Humanitarian Award for outreach that has made a positive global impact, and he's been featured in the Marquee's Who's Who in America for professional integrity, outstanding achievement, and making innumerable contributions to society. Whether he's running a large-scale construction project or mentoring a group of guys, he pours his passion and energy into building successful men, strong families and communities, and award-winning structures. Kevin is married to me, and together we have three amazing sons, three beautiful daughters-in-law, three precious grandchildren, and one really cool pit bull named Memphis. Kev, welcome to the show.
So fun to do this together.
Really super excited about this, and you're going to be the person I interview, so I'm looking forward to asking you many questions. But you know this because you actually listen to the show, which I really love. I think that's amazing.
I love this show.
Yeah. Well, at the open of the show, I make it personal and just ask, what is the Lord talking to you about these days? So what is He talking to you about these days?
We get up every morning and just spend some time in the Word together, and this is what I read this morning, and I think it really fits with what we're going to talk about here today. So this is out of Colossians 3. Since God chose you to be the holy people He loves, you must clothe yourselves with tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony, and let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your hearts. For as members of one body, you are called to live in peace and always be thankful. Isn't that a great passage?
So good.
It just fits with what we're going to talk about here today, I think. So things that we learned along our journey.
That is so you. We're going to give a little backstory on how we met. First, you're going to hear my version, which is the true version, and then you'll get to hear Kevin's version. Because we always
That's how she always starts out the story.
We tell the story very different. But I will tell you, before I met him, a few years before I met him, quite honestly, I dated a few different guys that were not good for me. And I
You dated guys before
me? I know,
me?
I'm sorry. But the thing was, I loved Jesus and was serious about him, but I was clearly insecure and second-guessing my worth. And it occurred to me, I was not making healthy choices in that regard. So I decided to stop dating. And so for a year, I just thought, I'm going to pursue God, but I'm also going to pray for the man that I believe God has for me. So every night I prayed for his work ethic, his humor, his walk with God. And there were some nights the Lord woke me up in the middle of the night to pray for him. And I wrote it in my journal. It seems like he's going through something. I know that sounds crazy, but later on when Kevin and I were dating and we compared notes, he actually was walking through a really difficult time the very nights that I was up interceding for him. But I remember one Saturday I woke up and I felt like the Lord said, "You're done. You're done praying." And I didn't know. Does that mean you changed your mind that you don't have a husband for me? but I just knew that the burden to intercede daily had been lifted. And I thought, you know, you're good. I trust you. So I stopped. I was done. And the very next Saturday is actually when I met you at a singles retreat. So you want to tell us context for how your life was going when we met?
Well, I think I was praying for you at the same time, and as we were comparing notes, just to be able to look back through our calendars and talking about our life when we met, you know, we were both praying for each other, which I think is so important for young people today. If you're not married, or you're just in that season where you're waiting, or you just haven't met that person yet, just to be praying for them ahead of time, you know, that was such a, it feels like that was so foundational for us, and it kind of just felt like a natural thing that's what we should do, so we both did that. But it turned out to be so important. And looking back on those stories now where we were, you know, praying for each other at the same time, and to look back and see how God was moving without us even knowing, that just shows the power of prayer.
Yeah, and his attention to detail. We came from two very different backgrounds, so the prayer was very necessary. But the part I always joke that he tells wrong is when people ask how we met, he jumps right in and says, "She crashed and burned. She fell for me hard." And
which is true.
We both know that wasn't true. Well, I was working registration at the camp, and he walked in, and I have this aversion
to prejudged me.
Prideful guys. I just, like, I see guys who are just kind of strut their stuff and think they're all that. I just have this aversion. Now, Kev is super humble.
You should just say, "I prejudged him."
Totally. Okay, this is where we agree. I prejudged you. Because he walked in and he had kind of a swagger, and instantly I judged him. I'm like, "Oh, he thinks he's all that. I don't like him." And that's terrible. But I was an immature believer. Let me just say, I mean, I have a lot more compassion for people now. But as a young single gal, I totally did. And so when he came up to the counter, I may or may not have.
No, you did.
Tried to overcharge him.
No, you did overcharge me.
Yeah. And so there was repentance. So, you know, forgiveness is the theme this month. And I apologize later, but I did try to charge him too much. And my friend who was working at the table said, "No, this is what he owes." And so, long story short, we started out bantering. And that is so much our relationship. But we met at that retreat. We started dating afterwards. And to be honest, 4 months later, we were engaged. And when we got engaged, when you proposed, we were on a beach. And tell us what you did.
We were on a beach, and honestly, I was in a place in my life where I just had all my ducks in a row. I had to be ready financially and every way secure, and I think a lot of guys probably feel that way. But something happened that we don't have to get into that whole story. But something happened where it just like changed our mind, where we really just want to follow God. That's what we want to do. So we started our engagement on a beach. I washed your feet in a act of service, and it just turned out to be something else, too, that we look back on, and it's like something that we always want to do with each other is to serve each other. And so it was kind of cool to look back on it now, saying that's how we started 38 years ago.
Yeah. So from start to finish, as far as, you know, from when we met to when we got married is about a year. And we got pregnant on our honeymoon unknowingly. We were going to wait 5 years. We both had jobs.
Well, eventually we knew.
Yeah, we did eventually figure it out. We were going to wait about 5 years, but really thank the Lord because we found out during the pregnancy that I had something called endometriosis. Mm-hmm. And they said, "You will have a hysterectomy in your 20s. So this is a saving grace." So any children you want after this, you'll have to have them right away. So we had our firstborn, Jake, and then during our second pregnancy, it was a high-risk pregnancy. Went to bed rest for 3 months. So I had, you know, we had our 1.5-year-old and on bed rest for 3 months, and that began the shift of weight, so to speak. My dad had cancer at the time, and it was a traumatic birth because we had a very evil doctor who hated women. So when Kev was out of the room, this doctor did some evil things, and so that was hard and terrible. But we delivered Luke. He had chronic respiratory issues, and there was a point when he was about 15 months old. We thought we were going to lose him. He was in the hospital with a respiratory virus, and we don't have time to get into the whole story, but we got him home and found out I was pregnant with number three. At 3 months along, I had to go back into bed rest, and I had 6 months of bed rest with a 1- and a 3-year-old. So at this point, you're still a young 20-something guy with two little kids and 6 months of bed rest, and we had no money. So what was that like for you?
Well, yeah, it really kind of marks the first several years of our story. It just was kind of some crisis and some difficult seasons that we'll have to get into, see how that kind of played out in our story. But there was always in our early life, you know, where a lot of our friends were just in a place where they were building their homes and just building their lives. And we were kind of struggling to hang on in that early season of our marriage.
We're going to pause here. When we come back, we're going to get into when the crisis really kicked up and what was going through your young mind as a young dad and husband. Susie Larson here with my husband, Kevin Larson. We're talking about our marriage journey, what we can learn when you're alone in marriage, when the weight shifts and more is on your shoulders than you bargained for. Don't go away. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Susie Larson Live. I'm Susie Larson, and my very special guest today is my husband, Kevin, and I've got him on the show today and tomorrow for a two-part series. Tomorrow, we're talking about the wild and amazing healing journey that the Lord has initiated and is working out in and through me, and I'm so grateful, and Kev's been with me every step of the way. But today we're talking about our backstory, because there are plenty of people we hear from our listeners. There's somebody is sick, and then the spouse is taking his hands off or her hands off, going, this is too much to handle. So we thought, let's explore what it's like, the messy, the good, the bad, the ugly, when one spouse is bogged down by sickness, maybe mental, emotional, physical, whatever it is. How do you get through it? And we're at this point in our story now. So we have two boys, one of them, Luke, our middle one. I was on bed rest for 3 months, and then we're pregnant with number three, and I had to go to bed for 6 months. And most of you know this part of my story. One day, the docs let me get up. I got up, met my old college roommates. We went for a walk. Long story short, that proved to be too much. I went back to bed, and 2 weeks from that outing, my face started to go numb. I started to have buzzing, numbing feeling in the base of my skull. It would crawl around in my face, and blurred vision, and forgetfulness, just weird brain things, pretty terrifying. But I still had 3 months to go. Now, I'd used up all my friend favors already in 3 months. So you can imagine the debt that I felt, even to my husband. I had some childhood trauma at the hands of teenage boys. And so when I became a Christian in 8th, 9th, 10th grade, and then as a young adult, I was all in, but I was still trying to prove myself. So at this point, to have to go to bed and rely on everybody, it confronted all of my insecurities. There was a point once we delivered Jordan, and there's too much of the story to tell because it's so involved, but my health plummeted. Once I got him home, my health plummeted, and I was sitting on the couch, and I was talking with my sister on the phone, and I started to mumble my words and mix my sentences up, and my face was numb. My body was buzzing, and she's like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And I didn't know, and she said, hang up. I'm calling Kevin. So he rushed in the door, and I sat there. You know, I had three little babies sitting on the floor, and I thought, my life is over. I'm so young, and yet my life is over. I just couldn't believe I had come to that moment. And Kev had to leave work so many times with two pregnancies of, you know, contractions starting, him rushing away from work as a young guy, hauling me into the hospital. I just marvel at the way that he did this. Well, he runs into the house, kneels down, grabs my hands, goes, what? So concerned. And I just cried and said, I'm so sorry. Well, he scooped me up and we got a sitter and he hauled me to the hospital. And I truly felt like my life was over. And I was on the hospital bed, and they'd run a bunch of tests, and they pulled Kev aside, but I could still hear. And he said, well, we've done everything we know to do here. We think she has either MS or a brain tumor. So you're going to have to take her home and start scheduling tests. Kind of buckle up, because this is going to be a journey. And so Kev hauled me home, carried me into bed, and tucked me in. And he turned the lights off, and he's just about to walk out. And I grabbed his arm, and I pulled him back. And I just sucked in this deep sob, and I just said, "You have to divorce me. You have to divorce me." And he said, "What?" And I said, "I'll go live with my mom and my dad. But I cannot bear to keep draining you like this. I can't bear for our kids to grow up with a mom who can't even function. And you've got to marry somebody who's funny and who loves Jesus." And I started to make his plan, and he just stopped me in my tracks. And he said, "You stop right now." And he knelt down, and he put his finger to my lips, and he says, "You are my bride. And you always will be. And if I have to kneel down to kiss you because you're in a wheelchair, then that's what I'm going to do." And in that moment, I experienced the tangible love of God. I knew I was saved. I didn't know I was loved. And that was the most profound expression of unconditional love. And Kev wasn't just speaking out of the emotion of the moment, because he'd been journeying with me for the last 7 months, 6 months on bed rest, and then all of this. That was probably one of your most heroic moments for me since I've known you. What were you feeling, and what was it like? What was your response to the stress in our home from that point on?
Well, it just, as a way, just hearing you say that just kind of brings you right back to that moment. And I remember that moment like it was yesterday. But, you know, I think there's times in our lives when we get news that is just earth-shaking. And just to back up a minute, I'm in a place at my young life where I'm trying to build my career, I'm trying to do my job, I'm trying to raise a young family, I'm trying to, you know, just take care of a wife and a new home. And so we had all the stresses and the pressures of life that everybody in this stage of life has, you know, and so trying to deal with that the best I can. And then another thing about me is that, especially at that time, I mean, I'm a performer, and I just feel like I have to do things on my own, and that just kind of has been part of my DNA since I was a little kid because of what I went through when I was young. But I always had to control things, and I just had to do things on my own, and if somebody else couldn't do it right, I'd have to do it myself. And so I had that kind of a mentality in my head, and that's just how I thought, and it really was deep into my DNA. So. But you get to a point like that where all of a sudden you get news that is you're struggling and something is, you know, something just rocks your world. It just has a way of changing your entire perspective on life, on jobs. And so at that moment, I think what comes out of your mouth naturally is what's really deep inside was like, there's nothing that is going to tear us apart. And this was a moment now that all of a sudden I can't control, and I don't have control over the situation. So there's a dependence that has to rise up, and it's something that we have to trust God for. But I knew at that moment, with potentially everything kind of crumbling down and not sure what our future looked like, where the thing that was really, really important to me at that time was that you and I stay together and we stay connected. And, you know, it probably was a fork in the road where it would have been maybe easier at the moment to say, I'm out, this is too hard, I can't do this. But at that moment, for whatever reason, I think God just had a plan for us, and he just had it just put it deep into my heart where just like we have to connect and stay together, and there's nothing that's going to tear us apart. We are going to walk through this together.
I almost can't bear just hearing you. I marvel. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow, we have already recorded tomorrow's show, and one of the things Kev will refer to in this book, Christ the Healer, we're going to give away 10 copies tomorrow. But what the author, F.F. Bosworth, says is so often the journey with God and even breakthrough prayers is like a checkers game. You make a move, and then God makes a move, and he'll never take your move, and he'll never move out of turn. And when I think of that in this moment, we're faced constantly with choices. Choose life or death. Choose relief or redemption. Choose I want to break or I want to break through. And I feel like that's where the heroes are made. And I remember this moment, and those of you who've heard me speak before, you've probably heard this story, but a lot of you maybe haven't, but I got to share it. But it was not glamorous. It was not glorious. It was just laundry piles piled up, the bills piled up. We had more medical debt than we had income. It was hard. And as you said, we had this contrast of friends who had money and health and were taking trips and wearing name brand clothes and building additions on their house. And it just, we were, you know.
We were hanging on by
hanging
a thread at that
on.
Time.
And I remember a day when our, you know, our dryer kept breaking down. And so Kev, bless his sweetheart, because we live in the cold, frozen tundra of the Midwest, would put a rope up in the living room to hang our clothes on. And this one particular time, I'd been on that couch 3 months for one bed rest, 6 months for the next, and then off and on a lot in the next several years with IV therapy, lying on that couch sick with an IV bag hanging from our mini blinds. And this particular day, they were playing in the next room and one was napping or something, I don't know, but I'm lying on that couch and it was Poppin Springs. My IV bag is hooked up to this bent mini blind. I'm looking up at this rope of clothes and they're garage sale clothes. And I'm like, oh my word, this is my life. And my dear husband always tried to come home with a smile on his face. And he came in the door. We lived in a little split entry. I'm home, he says, like a happy bear. And boom, I'm telling you that he blew a hole in the entryway, or I should say a hole blew in the entryway, and he fell through up to his armpits. His feet landed on our Christmas boxes that were in our tuck under closet in the floor below. So I'm hanging with this mini blind. I'm looking at the clothes. I look through the spindles at my shell-shocked husband, who is like up to his armpits in a hole in our entryway. And I'm like, we are pathetic losers.
And he's, that was like, one of my best moments.
Yeah, and he always, whenever I would get scared and stressed or whatever, he would call me names. So Pumpkin Duck, it's going to be okay, honey bun. You know, so he's crawling out of the hole, puts a piece of plywood on it. And the way that he handled it, too, I mean, and again, neither of us did this perfect. Next segment, we'll talk about the really low point in our marriage. But at this point, I sat up with my journal, and I just said, Lord, this is the life I have right now. But I have a husband who keeps coming home. It would be so much easier for him to keep driving. I have three little boys down the hall who do not know that we are in the crisis of our life. And though we don't know how we're going to get groceries in the next few days, we do have some food and we do have a roof over our head. And before I knew it, I'd filled three pages of my journal with things I was thankful for. And in that moment, I'm like, I want my life. I for so long, I would like look at other people's stories and want to throw my book across the room going, I hate my story. I mean, I love the characters in my story, but I hate my story. But in that moment, I saw potential, and I just thought, gratitude is the gateway to seeing God. I just believe that so much.
And the hard thing, you know, when you're in a season like that, and I just remember it so well, in those seasons, it just feels like it's going to last forever, you know? And but that really, those were chapters, and we had some hard chapters, and we had some good chapters, just like everybody's, you know, just like everybody does in life. But those were difficult chapters, and honestly they happened early on in their marriage, and you know, for whatever reason, God just, I think, had a plan for us. In our first years of marriage were pretty difficult, but what that did, since we just decided and determined that we were going to hang on and depend on God, it just built a foundation in our life for today, for what we're doing today, you know, and the opportunities that we have to talk with other people and serve the kingdom. It just built such a great foundation for mm-hmm. us.
And when the crisis settled down, my dear husband didn't slow down. And so next segment, we're going to talk about the rock bottom point in our marriage, some of the mistakes we both made, and how God redeemed it in spite of us. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Susie Larson Live. We're using Stephen Curtis Chapman songs for the bumpers of today's show because his music is what got us through some of the lowest points of our story. My husband is my guest today, Kev Larson, and we are walking through our very honest marriage journey. At this point of the story, we'd already covered the crisis and some of the points where God really helped us come together and hang in there and look to him. But this segment, really, it's going to be just a deep look at the mistakes we made and hitting a low point. So as I mentioned before the break, when the crisis sort of started to settle down, I battled for 20 years before a really bad relapse 7 years ago, but I still was a fitness instructor. I found a way to do life, and I'd probably end up in bed several times a year where I couldn't get out of bed for a couple of days. But otherwise, we had a life and we just did our workarounds. But when the crisis settled down, Kev didn't slow down, and he developed a workaholism. And I'm going to let him speak to that in a moment, but I will tell you, there would be stretches in the marriage, 3, 6, 9 months at a time, where we're barely connecting because he was working 3 jobs. And I'm going, this isn't working. And it was challenging. And it culminated into a 3-year stretch where he had some big construction projects in his day job, and then was asked to manage the building campaign of our church from ground up, the construction manager for that project. That about killed us. It was about a 3-year stretch. And what I learned later is that my love languages are quality time and acts of service, and those two things were non-existent in that 3 years. And I'm sending up the warning flares going, this isn't working. And our kids, we did youth. We were the youth leaders. He was the campaign, the building construction manager, and then his day job. And then I was serving at church in different ways. So our kids really didn't know how much we were struggling because they were in the mix with all the youth group activities. But marriage-wise, the well was running dry. And I went from hurt to angry to holding him in contempt, to be honest with you. I had no love left. There's no way I could leave because I'd made a commitment to the Lord. But I was so hurt and so disappointed. I tried every communicative style I could think of. And one day I was just lamenting to God, this is so painful. And the Lord so confronted me and said, you know, he is missing it, but you're the one who committed the greater offense. And I was shocked. I'm like, what? Not that I thought I was perfect, but I felt like clearly the fault rested on him because I was trying everything I knew to get through for the sake of our marriage. And I was praying my guts out. But the Lord was right, obviously. He said, you committed the greater offense. You've allowed your love to grow cold. And I was cut to the heart. And that was true because love is the highest order of the day. And a real sign of how you're doing with the Lord is how you're doing with others. How do you feel about those closest to you? How do you feel about your critics? I mean, how fresh is your love? And I went face down. I begged forgiveness. And there was then that I wanted to quickly repent to my husband. And it was that night he came home from work after dinner. He went and sat in the living room and he had a blueprint in the days when they actually worked off of real blueprints. And he had one on his lap and he was staring at it. And this may bug some of you women, but I sat on the floor because I wanted to humble myself as low as I could go. I said, hon, I need to talk with you. And he was looking at his blueprint. Yep, yep. And I said, I need you to look at me. And he put his blueprint down and I said, you know, this last few years have not been what I'd hoped they would be. And we're struggling in this marriage. But the Lord has shown me that I've committed the greater offense because I've let my love grow cold. And so whether you get me or not, whether you see me or not, whether you change or not, because I fear God, I'm going to love you. I'm going to make the choice to be kind, to serve and to love and to care for you no matter what. And as I talked, the more I talked, I saw his whole countenance change, like the scales fell off of his eyes. And I'm going to let him explain where he was coming from. But to be fair, he's a good guy who thought, our marriage is good. We're strong. We're believers. We're committed believers. We're committed to our family. We're good. I'll just get through this and then we'll be fine. But in that moment, it was amazing because something transformed. And we weren't changed instantly. We had a lot of hard work in our marriage to do to rebuild. But why don't you just take it from there, hon?
Yeah, when I think about that time, it's like just such a low moment. But what's kind of scares me and it makes me in a really dependent and a humble place is that I was so blind at that time, and I honestly did not see it until you said it in that way. I think there was plenty of times where we were talking through our life and talking through
and
what
fighting.
Our schedule looks like, and you know, and just fighting through this at the same time that we are raising kids and doing everything that young families do to hang on. And then at the same time, feeling just really just compelled that we need to be serving the kingdom. So I'm serving at church, and we're, you know, we're volunteer youth pastors. We're running, you know, we're just like running so hard. But I mentor young guys, and this is something that I say often, is that you know you can be successful in one area of your life, but a lot of times it's at the expense of another. So I think anybody can really like just kill it at work, but then what's happening at home? What's your marriage look like? And what is your balance look like? And so, and that was me at that time. I felt like, you know, I was probably everybody's hero at the time because I was serving at church, you know, like a rock star. And I was really doing okay at my job, even though that we were struggling. But I was carrying so much of that weight on my own shoulders, and it was not sustainable. And it obviously had a huge effect on the family. So, But what scares me is I was so blind to that, and I did not see it until she said that. And when she said the scales came off your eyes, that's what that moment felt like. Is I feel like all of a sudden I saw it, and I saw something that I had been doing, the choices that I've been making, and how that's affected our marriage. And this was on me, and I just had this moment where all of a sudden it's like, you know, that you can all of a sudden see clearly about what your choices are doing, and you know what your how your choices are affecting your family and especially my wife. That was a low point where I really was just put on my back and really had to repent and you know, try to figure out how I was going to do this different. Like I said, I was a performer, and I felt like I had to strive, and that was just my nature, and that's how I did life. But this was a point where I couldn't do that anymore, and it obviously was not working. So I was trying to do this on my own, and I was failing miserably at that time.
And if I remember right, the cancer diagnosis for you happened before then, because it was before we went to that church. So there were two kind of, you know, trajectory changes in your story. Yeah. So the what happened prior to that, when he was working, and with a company that, not the one he's with now, it was exhausting, and it was just a burner, you know, and I was watching him get so exhausted. It was straining our marriage, but it was straining his health too, because it just felt like the carrot kept dangling out further, and he would kept working harder and harder and delivering, but to no avail. It was a Christmas time. We'd sent out our Christmas letter talking about my health seemed to be improving. We sent that Christmas letter out, and within, I don't know, a few days, discovered you had cancer. Mm-hmm. And it had been growing in you for a year. It was testicular cancer, been growing up into your stomach. So the incision from your groin up way up to your stomach was significant, and radiation. And that that happened before this happened. And yeah. What I want to just say, I'm going to let you talk about that cancer in a minute, but these two points, after you emerged from cancer, that's when you came up with, I have to be about the kingdom. And so that's where your fuel came from to do as much as you were doing at church. So there was still this good heart to want to serve, but it was still on you and emphasizing maybe one thing at the expense of the other. So let's go back to the cancer, and then we're going to jump ahead to that part of the story. When it all came together, when you really learned that dependence needed to be your superpower. So, you know, again, high achiever, high capacity worker, and then you get so sick that you could barely work a day, an hour or two a day.
Yeah, that time was a struggle, and we did tell the story a little bit of out of order, but the thing about that is, you know, you would think that, you know, you have a lesson to learn, and you go through something like a cancer diagnosis. And at the time, I felt like, well, this is a game changer. And I felt like I really got to the point where I needed to depend on God. I just have to. And this is just another example of something that I can't control. But, you know, like we said, after that, I feel like I kind of refocused my life, and not so much on work, but more on, you know, the kingdom became more of a priority. So at that time, then it's like you start saying yes to everything for God. You know, you start doing whatever I can do.
Well, you want to make every moment count,
yeah,
you know?
And that was kind of the... Yeah. So that sounds good, but it really was coming from the same place that I was coming from before. I'm just going at it in a different angle. So it really didn't completely change me until later. It took several years to work that out of my life, where I was just hanging on, trying to do everything for everybody and trying to be the hero, whether it's, you know, the first part of my life at work or the, you know, then we go into this debt place that I just feel like I had to dig myself out of, and I had to be the one to do it. And then you go to a health struggle. I'm working through the health struggle with you, and we're kind of navigating through that. But I'm working my tail off and working way too much. And then I get my own diagnosis of cancer, and that kind of changed everything. Now I can't be the one to do all this. I really have to depend on God.
I also think that, you know, when you're the person who's healthy and high capacity, I don't wish it on anybody, but I do feel like it, you know, you were kind before, but I feel like you were compassionate after.
Yeah.
Because once you've been reduced to sickness.
Yeah, it does something in your heart.
Yeah.
It changes your perspective. And I always say, I mean, I look back on my life, I was 35 years old at that time. So I often refer to my life as before 35 and after 35, mm-hmm. and that's when my cancer diagnosis happened. It's really when it really was a game changer, even though it took several years, like we said, to kind of come out of that and really learn that lesson deep that has us where we are today.
You know, a couple of other game-changing moments, you know, is just the idea, or I should say game-changing ideas, but it was one of the times we had a conversation, because I really didn't have the feelings of love back then. And I want to be honest about that, because this is when young women quit marriage. Mm-hmm. They're like, I don't love you. I've fallen out of love. I don't love you anymore. Well, you can not have the feelings of love and be bound to the covenant before God, and he can breathe life. I love you more today than I've ever loved you. And I think God can do that in a marriage. So don't give up hope. But I remember you looking at me seeing that, you know, I was just fighting to find emotions. And you're like, you know, what are some of the non-negotiables that you need? And I said, well, we each have our own individual prayer life, but I want us to start praying together, non-negotiable, every morning, every night. That was a game changer. That changed our lives, because that's when we started to lean in with one accord and get a sense from what the Lord wanted, and God gave us a vision for our lives. And the other thing is, I had a dream to be generous, and we were so upside down financially, but you know, through just a series of events, just starting to sow seeds and manage finances God's way changed everything. Yeah, and sure, as you know this, as you hear from me during our share events, generosity is now a core value of our marriage. So I want you to know you can get through really, really hard times. Well, one other thing we'll talk about on the other side is, Kev said, what else do you need from me? And I said, I need you to plug in, like the electricity. We're going to use PLUG, P-L-U-G, as an acronym for really tangible way to connect with the Lord, connect with your spouse, that will help you prevail during these really hard times. You can make it. Do not give up hope. God can do anything, and he is able to do above and beyond all you could ever dare to ask or imagine. Keep hoping. Keep believing. Be honest about your struggle. God's with you. We'll be back in a minute.
And if it wasn't for God's mercy, his grace, there's no way we would be standing in this place. But because he has been faithful every step along the way, here we are together.
I can't hear that song without choking up. That song, Together, became our kind of anthem by Stephen Curtis Chapman. I'm Susie Larson. My husband, Kevin, is my guest today. Today and tomorrow, actually, we're doing kind of a two-part show. Tomorrow, we're talking about the wild healing journey that God has us on right now. But today, we're giving backstory on the messy parts of our journey of dealing with chronic illness for me, cancer for my husband, and how do you prevail and persevere in marriage when it gets so difficult. And it was for us, physically, financially, emotionally, and every other way. And in the last segment, I talked about the lowest point of our marriage, where just the well was empty, and I didn't have any feelings anymore because of workaholism and just a disconnect. But then when we realized God wants us to rebuild in the best way possible, you'd ask me, help me. I was blind to this. I didn't know how much I was working. I didn't know how much I was neglecting us as a couple. What can I do? Give me tangible examples of how I can make you feel cared about and seen and cherished. And I said, plug into me, like the electrical, you know, when you hook up to an electrical outlet, plug into me. And I said, I want PLUG to be an acronym to help you remember what I need from you. And the P in the word PLUG is pursue.
This was at I did hear that song that we were just talking about, that Together song. It's really kind of marked our life, and really in so many ways. Sometimes it's hard to talk about your past, especially your failures, but we really feel such a deep call to be honest about our story. And because I think a lot of people walk through this, and a lot of people walk through it alone, and they don't have anybody to talk to about that, or even to share that kind of a story with. So we really do want to be honest with our story and say, this is what happened. This is what I did. This is how I was blind. This is how I fell down. And we all have up and down moments. But then to get to a practical place where you can really start to see God work, and, you know, just being a construction guy and just being a guy in general, hearing a word, and the way she explained this to me was that this PLUG thing was really, it was really helpful. And it's something that we got to go back and talk about often. If I'm missing it somewhere, it's like, it just, all you got to do is say one word, PLUG. And you kind of remember, this is what we got to look back on and say, this is a part of our story that we need to remember. So P is pursue. And so this is one of those things, and you'll see a theme here, that every one of these words if I'm not doing it or I'm falling down, it probably means that I'm not really understanding God's love for me. So I can't really do the supernatural work of pursuing my sweet wife unless I'm pursuing God and I know that He is pursuing me. So that has to be part of it. So to understand your relationship with the Father is so important, because whatever I try to, I did this for many years, as we said, I tried to do this on my own, but if I'm not connected to God and not pursuing God and understand that He is pursuing me, then I can't do a good job of pursuing my wife. So in a practical sense, that just looks like sometimes just noticing if she's having a bad day or noticing that she's struggling. And it's, you know, it's a time like that. You grab her hand, and this isn't difficult, guys, to do, but for whatever some reasons, we just don't do it. But over time, I got better at this, where it's just a matter of paying attention, seeing what she's dealing with. She's going through something. She needs to talk about it. And we would do that. And I'd grab her hand. We'd sit down. We'd pray. And we would just ask God for help and direction. And it's just amazing what a little step like that of pursuit. It doesn't have to be anything gigantic, but it's just noticing, you know. And I think everybody needs that, whether, guys, if we admit it or not, we need to be noticed. We want to be acknowledged, whether it's by an employer, our spouse, our friends, but especially by God. We want, and He is pursuing us. He's pursuing us always, and sometimes we're just not paying attention. But when I got a grasp on that God is pursuing me, that healed something that was really deep inside of me. Really, I think the thing that probably caused me to strive so much was not understanding that God loves me and He cares for me and He pursues me. And that brings me to such a healing place and something that I need deep down, whether I admit it or not. And then I can offer that back to my wife and pursue her like she needs to be.
That's so good. Maybe, you know, you see yourself as an extension cord. I think maybe, I mean, you know more about the electrician stuff, but when you think about, you can see why a husband or a wife, if you're overworked already and you think, now I got to pursue them or now I got to understand them. And this isn't just go one way. This isn't just for husbands to wives. Wives, we need to pursue our husbands, you know, they want to be pursued too. But it's like, you'll start to resent it if you're doing it in your own strength. So to simultaneously pursue God and understand that He so, you know, chases after you, as you say, then you're imparting something that you possess, and it's coming from a supernatural source. And now to me, hon, it feels like, when you do that, it's coming out of a place of overflow, because you're just spilling over what God has already poured into you, because you have such an active walk with God now.
Yeah, if you think about it, I mean, guys, it's easy for me to think about this plug thing as a construction tool or an extension cord or whatever, but really think about it. If you're using a power tool, but it's not plugged in, mm-hmm. You're using a skill saw, but you're like rubbing it on a board to see if you can cut through it. But imagine the difference when you do plug in and you pursue, plug it into the wall.
Power.
Now you have power, and now it works as it's intended to work.
Come on, that's excellent. Okay, so you is understand. I just wanted you to understand.
Oh, we skip L.
Oh, L, I'm sorry, lead. I wanted you to lead, because you were a hero to everybody. I wanted you to be my hero. I wanted you to lead me into the presence of God. I want you to get vision for where we're going and communicate it. And so take that one, if you would.
This was one that maybe was a little bit more difficult to learn for me, but I was a leader in so many different ways. I was a leader in my job, and people just looked to me because I was in that role or I had that title. But deep down, I think I just thought, we're good, we're okay. I could lead in my job because I felt comfortable there, but you know, for a lot of years, I was not being the leader in our home. And this just goes back to like what we talked about earlier, is I was a hero to so many people, but not to you, because I wasn't being intentional about our marriage, and I wasn't doing what I was intended to do. And my, you know, the calling and my purpose that was on, you know, that God put on my life was to lead my family. And I was just kind of laying down on that part for whatever reason. I'm kind of embarrassed to say that now, but guys, we have a role in our families and with our spouses and with our kids. They're looking to us as leaders. And so we need to do that. But once again, unless we're being led by the Father, it's hard for us to do that in a effective way, because our flesh will get in there and we'll get in and quite likely mess it up unless we are letting God lead us. But when He's leading us and we're following closely after Him, we can be assured that we are, if we're following Him closely, that we are going to lead our family in a way that's effective and right.
So good. You know, sometimes young men, when they demand submission, they do not understand what Scripture says, because you're called to die as yeah. Christ laid his life down for the church. And if you ever have to demand submission, right. your wife does not feel safe with you. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that right now, that you lift her up. You love her. You cherish her. You pursue her. You pursue God. She'll follow you anywhere. But if you are misusing and overusing your power by demanding submission, you need to get back in the scripture and say, God, in what ways am I not submitting to you? And I just need that because I mentor young women, and there's times when I see that, and it's the makings of a bad situation in marriage. Okay, you.
Yeah, in a spiritual sense, leadership looks like service. It just
wow,
does. So when you are serving, that's the best way to be a leader, by serving your wife, serving your family. And that's where the real power happens. Mm.
All right. Now, so we're using PLUG as an acronym. So P is pursue, L is lead, U is understand. I wanted to be understood. I'm going, you know, men and women are different, you know, contrary to the current narrative. That's all I'll say about that. But we are different. Yep. And especially back then, as a young woman who had a lot of passion and vision, but a body that wouldn't cooperate, I needed to be understood, because, you know, there was times where before you were sick, you didn't fully understand. So you were kind, but there's times as you know, we missed it. And so I wanted you to seek to understand what is a day in the life like for me with three active little boys and a disease. And so talk about how you seeking to understand God's will for you, to understand that God understood how hard your life could be, helped you understand me more.
Yeah, it comes first from having that understanding, you know, that God gets it. He gets me. He understands me. He listens. He knows what I'm going through. So I need to do the same thing. And just going back to our story where I was just blind for so many years, I really was not understanding. That was one of my weakest points, I think, is not really understanding what was going on in your day. And really, I mean, I think that was selfishness, honestly, because I'm thinking about myself ahead of you and ahead of our family. So really to make it a point to say, I'm going to understand. I want to understand what you're walking through. So to be almost overly intentional about when you say something, to hear not only the words that you're saying, but what's behind it, what your day was like, to try to understand you in a way that's beyond just like, yeah, 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 I get that. Okay, you said you're tired, so I get it, you're tired. But there's always more to it than that, to understand what you're walking through and what your day was like, and to pause and put my own needs aside, and you know, and just to be able to say, I truly understand what your day was like, and I want to understand it. So, mm-hmm. And if it takes a while to get there, sometimes it, you know, a long conversation would get us there, where we understand where we're coming from.
Just have a minute left. We got to do the G in PLUG, and that's give grace.
So give grace is, you know, we all need that. And the first verse that I started this the show with is, this is what God calls us to, honestly. And when we think about it, what God has offered to us is unlimited. It's
lavish.
It's grace that's mm-hmm. unbelievable, and it's undeserved. So, but to be able to receive that and then to be able to offer that, it just makes relationships rich and powerful. And I'm just telling you, it works in a family, it works in a marriage, it works wonders, and it does miracles in a life, to be able to understand that, you know, everything doesn't revolve around me or us, but really always to look at this as we are a team. I mess up, and even though I don't deserve it, I receive grace. And so whenever we walk through something difficult, it just makes our marriage so much stronger when we give grace to each other. When we mess up, it's going to happen. You know, we're going to walk through times where we are making mistakes, and I do it all the time, as you know. So it's just something that we got to always remember in our life.
Such a great story. And I said we were going to talk about forgiveness, and we never really directly addressed it, but you can hear from our story. It was filled with moments of humbling ourselves before yeah. God, forgiving each other, choosing love again and again. And I pray no matter what season of life you're in right now, that you'll choose love, that you'll choose to forgive, that you'll choose to believe that God can redeem any and every situation.
Amen.
Kev, thanks for joining us, and thanks for hanging in there and building an incredible family legacy.
We love our life now.
Mm-hmm. So true. Love and appreciate you so much. I pray you found some encouragement here. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.